The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Phone lines are open. You've got questions. We've got answers. Let's do it.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, biblical scholar and cultural commentator, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Call 866-34-TRUTH to get on The Line of Fire. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you for joining us on The Line of Fire. It is, for those listening live, April 14th. Yeah, you said a day before tax day or extended over the weekend. No, it's Not Ashamed of Jesus Day, second annual Not Ashamed of Jesus Day. If you weren't aware, that means you're not getting our emails and our notices. So I'll share a bit more with you about that, the purpose of it, the why of it. We can still do today, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Any question of any kind that relates in any way to anything having to do with The Line of Fire, you are welcome to call in. Anything I've written about, spoken about, maybe you've heard stuff online, you want to verify whether it's true or not having to do with this, by all means, give us a call. So if you've got like a cooking question about the best Mexican food, sorry, I can't help you with that. If you've got a sports-related question about cricket and who's the best cricket team in England, sorry, can't help you with that. But the things we can help you with, we want to help you with. So 866-34-TRUTH. Let us go to Mario in London. Welcome to The Line of Fire.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brown, for taking the call. My question relates to some of the living conversations. Some of the living conversations of the gospel. Basically, for example, when he names Judah, he says, Judah is the son of Simon Iscariot. And I was reading recently in Mark chapter 15 that when they name Simon from Cyrene, they say he's the father of Alexander Rufus. So I was wondering, is it common in the Jewish customs of the time to name the father? Is it like a clue that the reader knew Simon Iscariot and Alexander Rufus in this name?
Yeah, so generally speaking, you would be known as the son of someone. You didn't have last names that were fixed the way we have last names today. So I would have been Michael ben Avram, Michael son of Abram. And if you went back further, it would have been, so Michael son of Abram, son of Lewis, you know, my grandfather on my father's side, etc. So that's how you would be known. Now, for clarification, it might be referenced who I was the father of or something like that. You do have in Arab culture to this day, in certain circles, that when you have your firstborn son, you change your name and you become Abu. So let's say I had my firstborn son and he was named Walid. I would become known as Abu Walid, which is father of Walid. So my name would change based on the son that I had. But generally speaking, you would just be known as so-and-so, son of so-and-so. If you go to Ezra, the 8th chapter, and see the length of his genealogy, you see how far back it goes. He traces his genealogy all the way back to Aaron. So the convention would be so-and-so, son of so-and-so. However, for clarification, if your son was known and you wanted to say, oh, it's the father of that person, then that would be a further clarification. But that wouldn't normally be part of your name, as with this custom of, say, like the Abu thing, changing your name after your son was born. To my knowledge, that was not something that existed in the ancient Jewish world.
Got it. So it may be that it's a clue that the people reading, let's say, Mark 15:21 knew those people, but it doesn't have necessarily been the case, let's say.
Right. Yeah, and it doesn't point to a specific custom. Something that's interesting, and I appreciate the call, in Richard Bauckham's book on Eyewitnesses of Jesus, he gives a lot of examples that would indicate that the gospel authors were eyewitnesses of what they're writing. You have like passing references that you wouldn't say unless you were there or you knew the situation or you knew the land well or the history well. The kinds of things that a later writer would not know to say or wouldn't think of saying. And although this is separate to your question, what's interesting is the names that are most common in the New Testament, we now know were the most common in the culture. You would see it, for example, from grave sites, what names are most common and things like that. So it's really amazing. And then you have the unintended coincidences where, you know, one writer will reference something that explains another obscure account somewhere else. So those kinds of things are indicating, yeah, this is people who are on the ground and telling the story to others who are on the ground in ways that would be useful and familiar for them.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Dr. Brown.
You are very welcome. 866-348-7884. Hey, to all of our friends at our new station in Phoenix. And by the way, we've got some exciting news as the Line of Fire is expanding on major stations across America. But please do send us your questions if you're unable to call in live during the broadcast. Send in your questions, and we answer off the air. We email back. We have a team that does that. Some things will get directly to me for my response. But some of them I'll also answer on the air. So just shoot us a note, AskDrBrownMinistries.org. Go to the website. You'll see contact. Shoot us a note. Say, hey, I'm a listener in Phoenix on the Great Salem Station there. I've got a question I'd love answered on the air. And we'll do our best to answer some of them on the broadcast. Okay. Just one moment before we go back to the phones. When I was writing the book Silencing of the Lambs, about cancel culture, the rise of cancel culture in America. And this is not just a phenomenon silencing the voices of Christians. This is something so broad-based that I could quote people as disparate as Bill Maher and Miley Cyrus speaking against cancel culture. So it would be basically that you step over a certain line or you're guilty of a certain offense and you're not just marginalized, but you're canceled. You can no longer have influence. You can no longer have a voice. And in particular, there has been an attempt to do that with Christian conservatives. We've been, in that sense, the tip of the spear. There's been an attempt to cancel. So the first half of the book lays out how widespread this is. It's kind of shocking, devastating. One of my colleagues said he couldn't read it at night because it was too overwhelming. He'd fall asleep with it on his mind. The second half of the book is strategies, is ways to push back, ways to overcome, with encouragement throughout, even in the difficult part of the book. But as I was writing, I felt stirred that in harmony with Esther 4:14, where Mordecai says to Esther, who knows that you've come into the kingdom for such a time as this, that we set aside every April 14th. It's also a time that kids are still in school so they can be around their schoolmates. And we proclaim this National Not Ashamed of Jesus Day. You say, well, that should be every day. True. But many times we kind of get into a lull in our neighborhood, in our job, in our school, and people don't really know who we are or what we believe. This is just a great day. Some of you are wearing something special. I know some folks are preaching on the streets and carrying signs. Others may be bringing a Bible to school with them, or bring a Bible to the workplace. Whatever you're allowed to do, we're not asking you to break a law, God forbid. Whatever you're allowed to do, do that. And just go out of your way to let people know, I love Jesus, I love you, and I'm not ashamed of the gospel. And one, it will further encourage you to be bold. Two, it will help those of you who've flown under the radar to take a little stronger stand. And three, it'll help you to see, wow, maybe there are more people in the workplace than I realized. Maybe there are more believers here, more people that agree with me than I realize. And it's kind of a strengthening encouragement together. So if you haven't gone out of your way to tell someone today, hey, I just want you to know, I love Jesus, I love you, and I'm not ashamed of the gospel. Go out of your way, do it, and I believe God will bless you for it. And over the years, we hope and trust that this will be something that will will have a ripple effect on a larger level across America. 866-348-7884. Let's go to Jose in Virginia. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Thank you for accepting my call. I have a quick question. It seems to me there's been a high rise of Roman Catholic apologists' claims that that rabbinic literature supports the office of the papacy. I would like to hear your thoughts with Roman Catholic claims that rabbinic literature does support the office of the papacy, such as you'll find Roman Catholic apologists such as Brent Petrie or Suhan Sana make such arguments. What's your thoughts on that?
That LGBTQ plus activism is the principal threat to freedom of religion, speech, and conscience, and is ultimately an assault by indoctrination on our children. We've been shouting that for years. And I told people this was an off subject, you're wasting our time. Obviously, that criticism didn't age well. I would tell them, I feel like an umbrella salesman in the desert. And people saying, Mike, why are you selling umbrellas here? And why are you building warehouses with more and more umbrellas? And I tell them, because the big storm's coming. And it's going to be real rainy. You're going to need umbrellas. And for years now, metaphorically, we haven't been able to make those umbrellas fast enough because the need is so great. So how does it manifest itself today? In the overt grooming of children, in the overt sexualizing of children, in the overt attack on the innocence of little children who, in many cases, have no understanding whatsoever. I'm talking about young children of sexuality, zero understanding. You know, you have a little boy, when he gets older, he wants to marry his mommy. I mean, he has no clue about sexuality and no clue about the depth of differences between a man or a woman or what that indicates. And you get kids that are 9, 10, 11, 12 years old making decisions that impact them for the rest of their lives. And the parents, do that. That's good. That's what we hear is a good thing to do. It's madness. Now you have the invasion of the drag queens. Oh, I remember being told, no. That's just like this extreme thing. It's just a few of the guys like to dress up. It's not what we're talking about with homosexuality or trans. You know, it's something else. Now this just mainstreamed to the point that you have school boards recommending, endorsing family-friendly drag queen events. So Brittany Meyer is an outspoken Christian mom, and she went and rebuked the local school board when they had been called to step back and apologize and did no such thing. The video's gone viral. She's actually been on Tucker Carlson talking about these things on Fox, so a lot of people don't know.
Chronic inflammation is the greatest health threat to humanity. Infections, injuries, toxins, poor diet, and chronic stress can attack your immune system and lead to chronic inflammation. But now there's a solution you can fight this dangerous silent killer with. Nopalea, made from the superfruit of the Nepal cactus, containing a unique group of bioflavonoids clinically shown to reduce chronic inflammation.
In a random, double-blind, placebo-controlled study, it showed a reduction of elevated, at-risk C-reactive protein levels, resulting in an improvement in range of motion in the back, neck, and joints, and an overall improvement in the quality of life.
Nopalea has helped thousands of people by lowering levels of chronic inflammation.
Let's hear what customers are saying.
I'm a personal trainer and owner of 3 gyms. Super excited, doing a renovation in here, bringing new equipment in. And as I was bringing the new equipment in, I was trying to move a piece. I moved, the equipment didn't move, and I injured myself severely. So it was frustrating. It was really depressing. I wasn't able to work out. I wasn't able to train. I wasn't able to do just normal daily functions. After taking Nopalea, I found that it really helped with my recovery, not only with my severe injury in my back, but it also helped in my recovery of my workouts.
Nopalea has helped thousands of people by lowering levels of chronic inflammation.
To place your order, call 800-771-5584 or online at trivita.com. As a new customer introductory offer, use promo code BROWN25 for a 25% discount on your purchase of Nopalea. And 100% of your first order will go to the support of Line of Fire. Go to trivita.com or call 800-771-5584. Again, 800-771-5584.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. Delighted to be with you. We have no idea what just happened. The delights of live radio, where suddenly you couldn't hear me, and I could hear you. So anyway, we are continuing unabated. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. And I want to go back to Jose. So sorry that we got cut off, sir. Are you aware of any of the arguments that these Roman Catholic apologists have raised, saying that rabbinic literature supports the papacy?
Yes. So a couple. So one would be the example of binding and loosing, and they would bring that out from the Talmud or the Mishnah. Some of them would be just, they would point to Isaiah 22:22 with the typology of Eliakim. That's more Suhan Sana. But a lot of the argument is really, essentially the office of the papacy is rooted in Jewish tradition. And it's found within how they dress.
Right. Thank you for asking about that, Jose. It's absolutely brand new to me in terms of this argument. I'm not familiar with it. I've never run into it. But what strikes me as utterly bizarre is, number one, rabbinic Judaism did not find any legitimacy in the church or faith in Jesus. And in Catholic history, looked at the Catholic Church in very negative terms. Whether they were guilty of idolatry or not would be debated in rabbinic Judaism, but there'd be nothing positive in it. There would be no spiritual authority recognized for the Pope, nor is there an office within Judaism that would be parallel. So they might argue, well, you know, rabbinic Judaism has the same interpretation of binding and loosing that we do, etc. But rabbinic Judaism is going to have many things in common and many things that are going to differ with Catholic tradition. Maybe you can help me here. I just don't follow where the argument would possibly go, because rabbinic Judaism, as I said, utterly rejected the Catholic Church and even saw that as the manifestation of Rome/Edom, you know, the wicked enemy that would be destroyed at the end of the age in many ways. That's one. And then just on a pragmatic level, there'd be no office, position, anything within Judaism that in any way would parallel the papacy. In other words, there's no such thing as a Jewish pope. You have councils of rabbis, you had the Sanhedrin, you had respected leaders, but there's nothing that would be similar to a pope in rabbinic Judaism. And I even wonder, what they would get out of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, why point to rabbinic Judaism for that purpose? It just seems odd. So am I missing something, or is it that bizarre?
I'm personally Protestant. I'm a Christian. I'm not Roman Catholic. It's something in which I've came across with close friends of mine. I've read it. I've heard lectures from these Roman Catholic apologists, such as Brant Buttrey. I think I'm not seeing his last name right, but essentially he has a book and he has literature that essentially Jewish roots, Roman Catholic practices, beliefs are found within Jewish roots.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, so he's respected for his Catholic scholarship in there, and I imagine there are some good spiritual insights that he's made along the way. But again, to argue for the papacy, it would be one thing to try to argue, like he might, that Passover traditions lead directly into rabbinic traditions about the Passover, very much in harmony with Catholic traditions about the Eucharist. That would be an argument he's made, which I've never personally investigated. But this would just be, again, I don't want to trash something that I'm unfamiliar with and that there may have a little better argument than I'm aware of, but on the surface, it seems bizarre and a strange place to go. Like, for example, when I go to rabbinic literature and I want to talk about a suffering Messiah, I understand that the rabbis rejected Jesus. I understand that I cannot go to the Talmud to support faith in Jesus by the rabbis, but I can say, isn't it interesting that this verse that I interpret as a suffering Messiah, the Talmud does as well? Or isn't it interesting that there's this tradition about the atoning power of the death of the righteous in Judaism, and look at how that parallels some of our concepts about the power of the death of the Son of God, etc. So I'll look for concepts like that, but always in being fair to Judaism. And that's why I say this one is an odd one, but you've got me curious. I'll take a look to see if I can see this anywhere. But thanks for alerting me to it. I've been completely unfamiliar with it, and I'll have to find out more and be able to comment on it better. I apologize. I'm not familiar with it right off the top of my head.
No, thank you even your insight was helpful. So I do thank you for that. I am looking forward to you looking more into it and even maybe bringing it up in the future. So that would be interesting.
All right, great. Thank you. God bless. 866-348-7884. We've got some phone lines open, which often is not the case on Friday. Let me grab some YouTube questions. Vic on YouTube. So go ahead. If you've got a question on YouTube, then by all means, post it there in the chat box, and I'll see if I can answer some of your YouTube questions as well. But go ahead. Go for it, guys, there. I'm going to try to get to some YouTube questions. Why do Messianic Jews allow women to teach other men formally? Well, some do and some don't. No different than churches. There are some churches that have female pastors or female teachers, and there are some Messianic Jewish congregations that have female teachers as well. And it's all depending on how certain key scriptures are taught and understood. By and large, though, with the rarest of exception, Messianic congregations have as senior leaders men. They are the Messianic rabbis. It's rare to have a female Messianic rabbi, but they do exist. Probably more rare than a female pastor. But yeah, it's no different than churches that feel that women can teach and preach and minister. Same with Messianic congregations. It's certainly nothing unique or distinct among Messianic congregations. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. 866-34-TRUTH. And if you don't get my emails, then you may not have been reminded about today being our special Not Ashamed of Jesus Day, second annual. We'd love to remind you. We'd love to let you know about my latest articles. We'd love to let you know about my latest videos. We're always putting out new information, sometimes as many as 8 or 10 new pieces every single week, and so many you'll find relevant, you'll find helpful, you'll find They are directly related to things that you're dealing with yourself in your own life. So by all means, sign up. It's absolutely free, of course, to get in our welcome tour. I want to send you a free mini ebook on how to pray for America. You'll find very relevant and helpful. And then share more about my own testimony from LSD to PhD and the three R's of our ministry, which have never been more relevant: revival in the church, which sparks a gospel-based moral and cultural revolution, which in turn leads to the redemption of Israel. That's what we breathe for. That's what our hearts beat for. That's what we expect to see. And we're definitely on the cusp of some amazing days here in America. Yeah, things are going crazy on the one hand, but the gospel is going forth. Lives are being changed. Jesus is being exalted. 866-34-TRUTH. We got some more questions lined up for you. And let's see, we come back, we'll start with Dwayne in Denton, North Carolina, on the other side of the break, right here on the Line of Fire broadcast. And let's just see with that, I think we'll fade out and let you hear
Hey friends, this is Dr. Michael Brown. I want to invite you to join our support team. Make an investment of $1 a day that will absolutely last forever. You know, the Lord has given us a holy mandate to blanket America with the Line of Fire broadcast. And on a regular basis, we hear from folks writing in, Dr. Brown, I used to be a practicing homosexual. I listened to you. I heard Grace and Truth together. I was changed. We hear from pastors who say, thank you for speaking with compassion, but giving us backbone and courage. And we know across America, so many believers are getting healthy and strong through listening to the broadcast, through listening to these messages as we tackle the controversies, the most difficult issues of the day. We even hear from former Muslims who've come to faith, from Jewish people who now believe in Jesus, Yeshua the Messiah, through this broadcast and our resources. So join our support team. $1 or more per day makes you an official torchbearer. Immediately, you will get access to hundreds of hours of terrific online classes and exclusive video content. Every single month, we'll send you a brand new audio message, and along with it, an insider prayer newsletter where we'll talk about the things that are going to be coming in our ministry and share some of the amazing testimonies of the fruit that you are a part of. And when you do sign up, I want to give you two books as a special gift. First, Compassionate Father, a Consuming Fire. Who is the God of the Old Testament? I take the best of my Hebrew and Old Testament scholarship, wrap it together in this book that you'll find eye-opening, answering many of the questions you have. And then Revolution, my classic book that tells you how to wage war the Jesus way, overcoming evil with good, overcoming hatred with love. We are transformed. We can bring transformation to the nation. So call this number now, 800-538-5275. That's 800-538-5275. Say, I'd like to become a torchbearer, or go to askdrbrown.org. Click on Donate Monthly Support.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, 866-348-7884. That is the number to call. And I'm going to go right back to the phone, starting with Dwayne in Denton, North Carolina. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
You're welcome.
So I have a question about, can you hear me, sir?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, I have a question about movies. You know, in the past, there's always been movies about exorcism, and there's even one coming out now called The Pope's Exorcism. So I was just wondering if the Catholic Church has actually have record of casting out these demons, and are there any truth about the way these demons are portrayed in these movies? Is that, I mean, I believe in demons, of course, because of the Bible, but the way they're acted out in these movies and portrayed, is that accurate?
All right. These things are really quite exaggerated, the way you have like in the Exorcism movie and things like that. And of course, it's made for Hollywood to be exaggerated. But bear in mind, you have some extreme pictures in the Bible, right? Nothing Hollywood made is as extreme as what happened, say, with the Gadarene demoniac in Mark, the fifth chapter, right? With demons running into a couple thousand swine that run into the water and drown themselves. So, you know, that would be pretty extreme. But, you know, the people levitating or heads turning around or different things, most of that is really grossly exaggerated. However, there are a lot of bizarre things that do happen with deliverance and exorcism. And the key thing is never to glorify the devil or give him attention. In other words, Satan likes to perform and likes to draw attention to himself. And in cases like large ministries where they'll be ministering to hundreds of thousands of people and people start manifesting demonically all over the crowd, normally in settings like that, you have workers that immediately grab those people and bring them over to a special tent where they'll just get ministry and get set free, because otherwise it becomes a distraction. So folks that are engaged in public deliverance ministry need to use wisdom in that regard. But you should check out the book Blumhardt's Battle with Satan. I believe it's Blumhardt. Blumhardt's Battle with Satan. He was a famous Lutheran pastor over a century ago in Germany, and began dealing with a woman who was demonized. And this was over a period of many months that she was set free. He ended up with a powerful healing ministry, carefully documented thing. He would always have a witness there, like the mayor of the city or a respected town council person. And you're talking about animals, little animals coming out of her body, pieces of metal coming out of her body, crazy stuff. But he is historically a recognized and respected minister of deliverance. There's a new movie that came out today, Nefarious. Steve Dace gave me a preview viewing of it, and it is very intense. It's very realistic in that regard. I mean, I've seen demons speak through people where, you know, the voice is completely different, like a woman with a high-pitched voice, and it's a low, growling voice of a man. So these kinds of things do happen. One of my friends, a very solid sound pastor in Queens, New York, his father was engaged in a lot of deliverance, and he said he saw people turn colors. He saw people lift off the ground. So these things can be very bizarre. But again, by the time they make it to Hollywood and the world puts it out, it tends to be quite exaggerated and certainly not what you will normally see. But if you're able to see the movie Nefarious, it really indicates how a demon can take hold of someone and work through them. It's a very intense movie with a strong gospel message, so you may want to check that out. But thank you for asking, Dwayne. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir, very much.
Bye-bye. All right. You are very welcome. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to run back over to YouTube. All right. Let's see here. Not that question. All right, here we go. What advice do you have for someone struggling in their faith because they can't understand how they could be happy in heaven knowing their unsaved loved ones are in hell? All right, that's certainly a very valid question and a great question to ask. I mean, think of it. Right now, let's say that you're getting it's your birthday, and there's a big celebration for your birthday at work or at school, and how wonderful, and people you haven't seen for years are there, and you're so surprised, and it's so special, and there are these amazing presents. But you have a child that just got in a terrible car accident in a friend's car a couple of days ago, and that child is right now having emergency brain surgery, and you don't know if they're going to live or they're going to die. Yeah, how much could you enjoy that birthday party and that birthday celebration? Well, obviously multiply that with the thought of knowing that a loved one was being punished and was lost forever. How are you going to handle that? If you're able, and this was Nikita who asked this, Nikita, if you're able to get my new book, Why So Many Christians Leave the Faith, if you're able to get it, I think you'll find a really helpful chapter in there, which answers the question, how could a good God send billions of people to hell? I think you'll find that chapter really, really helpful if you're able to get the book. But let me answer for you now and everyone else on the air. Number one, we don't know what we'll be conscious of or not conscious of in eternity. In other words, there are a lot of things that we're certainly not going to remember. Let's say that you were raped as a child and suffered terrible abuse as a child. Well, you're certainly going to have memories of that in heaven. Let's say that you were a believer and backslid and fell into drugs and stealing. Well, in heaven, you're not going to be thinking about drugs and stealing. So there's going to be much of our consciousness, the things we are aware of today, somehow that we won't carry them. Let's say you were terribly sexually immoral before you were a believer. Certainly you're not going to have to fight immoral thoughts in heaven, right? So I don't know. We don't know what we will be conscious of in the world to come. That's the first thing. The second thing is we'll be in the presence of a perfectly good God. A God more wonderful than our wildest dreams could ever imagine. And in his presence, everything will make sense. Everything will make sense. Now, I'm not in the place that Jonathan Edwards was at, that he thought that it would be one of our great joys or spiritual experiences to gaze at the fate of the lost in hell, that would somehow bring us some type of joy. Imagine you could say, well, because we'll see the perfect justice of God. Others would argue that the Bible's teaching is that the punishment lasts forever, but that the punishment is eternal death, eternal destruction, so that there is a cutoff period rather than people being tormented forever and ever, that there is a final cutting off, a final perishing, and therefore we will not have to have that reality of people burning forever while we're rejoicing in heaven. So any of those things would tell me that we will be in perfect joy forever in heaven and that we will not be conflicted over the fate of a lost loved one. I thank you for the question. Let us go to Alberto in Georgia. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, good afternoon, Dr. Brown. My question is, Jesus said, and then John said, the world of his own. So why all these secular men who's by Bud Light, they're upset because they got the transgender guy on their Bud Light can. They should be supporting the transgender. They should keep buying Bud Light beers because Jesus Christ said, the world of his own. So they should support it. While they're upset, I'm telling boys, I'm drinking, boys.
Yeah. So the reason is, I appreciate the question. By and large, the world does love its own, meaning that the world sides with worldly values, that the world sides against the gospel. But it doesn't mean that everything the world does, that everyone in the world loves. Look, you have worldly people that disagree on all kinds of subjects. You have worldly people that disagree on politics, worldly people that disagree on cultural agendas, worldly people that disagree on entertainment, sports, etc. And yet overall, they are of the world. But look, even before I was saved, there were things I would do and there are things I wouldn't do. There are lines I would cross and there are lines that I wouldn't cross. So every human being is still going to have a conscience, and God is at work in the midst of this. I just wrote an article last night that picked up on some of the themes I talked about on the radio early this week about how the pushback continues, that the radical left overplays its hand. The radical left goes too far And because of that, people start to wake up. So this is also the result of prayer and exposing a wrong agenda. But generally speaking, and that's what Jesus is talking about, the world loves its own. If you were of the world, John 15, the world would love you as its own. But because you're not of the world, but I've taken you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. So it is really in terms of eternal truth that the world loves its own and rejects us. That remains true to this moment. You know, the same people, think of this for a minute, the same worldly country music star that goes out, parties, gets drunk, but is upset with Budweiser for what they've done with this male individual identifies as female, making this man their poster girl, that person is still going to reject the gospel. Right, and still stand against us. But I appreciate the question very much. Thank you, Alberto. 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, Josh, thanks for your donation on YouTube. Who is the prince in Ezekiel 46? Not the Messiah. The prince in Ezekiel 46 will be the Davidic ruler in the millennial kingdom on the earth. So under the Messiah, if this is something that literally comes to pass, as I believe it will, that Ezekiel 40 through 48 will literally come to pass during the millennial kingdom on the earth, and Christians can divide over that. They can say these are just spiritual images or metaphors or things. But if this is literally fulfilled, which I believe it will be in a future temple in the millennial kingdom, the priest is not the Messiah. The priest is the Davidic ruler, and also notice called the prince, rather than being called Messiah or even rather than being called king in that context. There can be overlap in the words of prince and king in Hebrew, but in any case, I do not believe that that is the Messiah, but rather a Davidic leader there. Okay, one more on YouTube. Hebrews 1:2, in the last days, did the Jews see that as the end of the old covenant, beginning of new? No. Let me explain my fervent
response. Nopalea has helped thousands of people by lowering levels of chronic inflammation.
I really enjoy being physical. It's something I've just always loved, but I've definitely had times where it's really crippled me up. Being a horse trainer can be pretty physically demanding with all the duties that I have, not just riding horses for a living, saddling horses, caring for the horses. I feel like Nopalea just took the edge off, and then it's continued to keep me from getting sore. Nopalea, it's been a huge blessing.
Now there's a solution by lowering levels of chronic inflammation. Nopalea, made from the superfruit of the Nepal cactus, containing a unique group of bioflavonoids clinically shown to reduce chronic inflammation.
In a random, double-blind, placebo-controlled study, it showed a reduction of elevated at-risk C-reactive protein levels, resulting in an improvement in range of motion in the back, neck, and joints, and an overall improvement in the quality of life.
It's fun to be on the golf course again. I'm able to swing the club freely. Hopefully, I'm hitting better golf shots. Nopalea has allowed me to get back on the golf course, enjoy the game that I love, and maybe even give me that little edge to beat my friends at the game.
Nopalea has helped thousands of people by lowering levels of chronic inflammation.
To place your order, call 800-771-5584 or online at trivita.com. As a new customer introductory offer, use promo code BROWN25 for a 25% discount on your purchase of Nopalea. And 100% of your first order will go to the support of Line of Fire. Go to trivita.com or call 800-771-5584. Again, 800-771-5584.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be spending this time with you. We apologize for a couple of technical issues we had to overcome here today, but as always, the joy of live radio. I've done live radio from countries like India, and we'll have this internet failure in the building. It's like, we got to figure out what to do. They say, oh, we can send someone to the room in an hour. I said, no, I need somebody. I need a tech person now. A YouTube question about Hebrews 1:2, referencing the last days in Jewish thought. Do the last days be the end of the old covenant, the beginning of the new? No, the last days in the New Testament clearly means the period from the death and resurrection of Jesus until his return. So we have been in the last days. 1 Corinthians 10 would verify that. Hebrews 1 would verify that. James 5 would verify that. 1 Peter 1 would verify that. 1 John 2 would verify that, that we have been in the period called the last days. But broadly speaking, in Judaism, for example, based on Isaiah chapter 2, V'hayava acharit hayamim, and it will be at the end of days, that would mean the messianic kingdom on the earth, the final phase of things before the eternal age. There was not so much a covenant, an idea of old covenant to new covenant. The people of the Dead Sea Scrolls emphasize that more, but in Jewish tradition, rabbinic Judaism was not emphasized in the same way. Let's go to Joshua in Tennessee. Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Michael Brown. How are you, sir?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your ministry. I really appreciate it. And I also want to give a shout out to those behind the scenes and to say thank you for their time and their efforts as well.
Yes, they do a great job. We wouldn't be here without them. Thank you.
Yes, sir. God bless them. Okay, so my question is, I asked for just a quick synopsis of it, and for me, it would literally be, you know, unity amongst discourse. And, you know, lately, I know spiritual warfare is an all-time high in many ways, and we see the state of the world, but what's really been disheartening to me lately, and what's really discouraged me, to be honest, is just the disunity amongst fellow believers. And just the level of discourse that we see both online, and even lately I've noticed in person as well. So my question was just, how do you fortify yourself in the Word to walk in these things, both in the world, but especially right now in the body, where we seem to be at a time where so many issues that used to be tertiary have now become main issues. And I know you always talk about keeping right. Main things the main things, which is the gospel, but how do you keep that discouragement at bay? When you see so many brothers and sisters at each other's throats so quickly, it's been something I've really
struggled with. It is grievous to see the level of disunity that can be here. Now, we know that in New Testament times there were unity issues. We see it already in the book of Acts. We see it in the letters of Paul. Conflicts are being addressed. So this is nothing new, but it's been amplified, and not just amplified, but exacerbated by social media. Because not only are divisions more clearly seen, but now we have vehicles by which we can attack each other and misunderstand each other and demonize each other even more. And in a split second, when tragically some years ago, when Rick Warren's son killed himself, I was just appalled by different people posting, some people blaming the Warrens, and some, you know, just, I thought, what in the world? These are professing Christians. And during the Trump presidency, in one of my books, I asked the question, have we failed the love test? And the answer was a resounding yes. So it is grievous, and we should be burdened by it, not discouraged in a hopeless way, but we should be burdened. This should hurt us. This should be something that we take to the Lord. However, we don't have to be part of the problem. Number one, we want to really meditate on John 17 and see how important the unity of the body was to Jesus. That's the first thing. And then look at key passages, be it in Ephesians 4 or Psalm 133, other passages that talk about the importance of unity or the beauty of unity or the blessing of God that comes through unity. So I meditate on John 17. I look at those other key passages. And then I would determine to be part of the solution. James Robinson has told me many times that the most impactful thing that Billy Graham ever said to him was to spend time with people that you don't like. I mean, I have the quote exactly right. Spend time with people you normally wouldn't spend time with. In other words, let's say you're a fundamental Baptist and you'd never spend time with charismatics. Well, spend time with them. Or let's say you're a charismatic and you'd never spend time with Calvinists. Well, spend time with them. And what will happen more than not, unless you start to get into an argument, Joshua, what will happen more often than not is you'll find more common ground. You'll find, well, you love Jesus also. You love the word also. You share the gospel also. You're devoted to the word also. I didn't know that. So I've often asked people, other believers from other backgrounds, to share their testimonies with me, feeling that if I could hear how the Lord saved them and what he did in their lives, how important that would be and how I'd find common ground. And then we also realize that we need each other, that the body's not complete without everybody else. In other words, Jesus is not coming back for a fractured, broken, divided church. He's coming back for a bride. He's coming back for one body. And I need you and you need me. So I feel that these steps can be very helpful. And what blesses me and what saddens me is many people thank me for setting an example of unity, of working, like for example, Dr. James White and I are dear friends, you know, heart friends, even though he's a staunch Calvinist and I'm quite the opposite. And even though I'm staunch charismatic and he's quite the opposite, but we know our common love for the Lord and we appreciate and honor one another. And I'll work with someone who's a brother or sister on the main things. You better believe it. At the same time, it's grievous in that it's like a big deal to people. In other words, this should just be the norm. Last point, there was a little girl who was trying to figure out what it meant when Jesus said, love one another and how to do it. And as I remember the story, she figured it out, and she said, okay, I'm one, and you're another. So it's that simple. It's like, okay, I'm going to find somebody to love that's in the body. I'm going to find someone that's marginalized and love that person. I'm going to find someone that is different than what I'm used to, but as far as I can tell, they're a believer. We're not talking about people who deny the gospel. We're not talking about people who deny the authority of Scripture. We're not talking about people who are heretics. I have no unity with them. I pray for their salvation and repentance. But otherwise, let's do what we can to be part of the solution. And let it be that if any non-believer visited our social media page, they would be blessed by our spirit and tone. That they would say, wow, that person's a Christian. It looks very Christian. Hey, Joshua, thank you for the call. And above all, just being with the Lord is where I get encouragement. Just spending time with him, being in his presence, that's where I get my biggest encouragement, because in his presence is fullness of joy. Hey, thank you for the question. Revelation, so it's Reverend Revelation on YouTube. Thanks for your donation. I'm working on my MDiv thesis. John 16:7-11 may reference different definitions of sin, righteousness, and judgment for the new covenant. Also, any son of man is Messiah expectations. I don't see John 16:7-11 as really speaking as the Holy Spirit comes to convict the world of sin, righteousness, and judgment. I don't see these different definitions of sin, righteousness, and judgment. If you check out Leon Morris's commentary on John, I really like the way he unpacked the meaning of these verses. So check out Leon Morris on John's gospel, his commentary. I think you'll find that really interesting. Also, any son of man as Messiah expectations. Check out Daniel Boyerin, B-O-Y-A-R-I-N. Daniel Boyerin, a Jewish scholar, and in his mind, there were expectations of a messianic figure known as Son of Man. Other scholars would differ with that. Clearly, Jesus is pointing back to the figure in John chapter 17, absolutely pointing back to him and when he uses the Son of Man reference, or Barnasha in Aramaic, Ben Adam in Hebrew. But check out Daniel Boyerin. Some of the work is controversial, but you'll find his book a few years back. It's been out probably, maybe a decade now. But anyway, you'll find that helpful. Hey, friends, I would love if you could be in prayer for me. I fly out right after the broadcast here from Texas, fly out to San Francisco, Danville, California, coming your way for an End Times conference this weekend. Then from there to Kona, Hawaii, to pour into some YWAM leaders, then back to Liberty University. Everybody listening on our great station in Lynchburg, we've got an open to the public meeting Thursday night this coming week at Liberty University, how the church can provoke Israel to jealousy. That'll be happening, and got a lot of travel, then back home, then back to Texas, and of course coming your way every single day with radio. So thanks for praying. And if you haven't visited our sponsor's website, Trivita, be sure to check it out, trivita.com. And when you go there, be sure to use the code BROWN25. Not only does that give you a 25% discount, but it also guarantees that 100% of your first order, 100% of your first order will go to support the Line of Fire, help us to get on more stations around America. And in addition to that, all future orders, more than the tithe, will be donated back to the Line of Fire. So go to trivita.com, check it out, and use the code BROWN25. May the blessing, smile, grace of God be yours this weekend.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.